Chapter 33. Paul's education, after the lapse of some minutes, which appeared an immense time to little Paul Dom beyond the table, Dr. Blimmer came back. The doctor's walk was stately, and calculated to impress the juvenile mind with solemn feelings. It was a sort of march, but when the doctor put out his right foot, he gravely turned upon his axis, with a semicircular sweep towards the left, and when he put out his left foot, he turned in the same manner towards the right, so that he seemed, at every stride he took, to look about him, as though he were saying, "Can anybody have the goodness to indicate any subject, in any direction, on which I am uninformed?" "I rather think not." Mrs. Blimmer and Miss Blimmer came back in the doctor's company, and the doctor, lifting his new pupil off the table, delivered him over to Miss Blimmer. "Cornelia," said the doctor, "Dombey will be your charge at first. Bring him on, Cornelia, bring him on." Miss Blimmer received her young ward from the doctor's hands, and Paul, feeling that the spectacles were surveying him, cast down his eyes. "How old are you, Dombey?" said Miss Blimmer. "Six," answered Paul, wondering, as he stole a glance at the young lady, why her hair didn't grow long like Florence's, and why she was like a boy. "How much do you know of your Latin grammar, Dombey?" said Miss Blimmer. "None of it," answered Paul. Feeling that the answer was a shock to Miss Blimmer's sensibility, he looked up at the three faces that were looking down at him, and said, "I haven't been well. I have been a weak child. I couldn't learn the Latin grammar when I was out, every day, with old Glubb. I wish you'd tell old Glubb to come and see me, if you please." "What a dreadfully low name," said Mrs. Blimmer. "Unclassical to a degree. Who is the monster, child?" "What monster?" Inquired Paul. "Glubb," said Mrs. Blimmer, with a great disrelish. "He's no more a monster than you are," returned Paul. "What?" cried the doctor, in a terrible voice. Aha! What's that?" Paul was dreadfully frightened, but still he made a stand for the absent Glubb, though he did it trembling. "He's a very nice old man, ma'am," he said. "He used to draw my couch. He knows all about the deep sea, and the fish that are in it, and the great monsters that come and lie on rocks in the sun, and dive into the water again when they're startled, blowing and splashing so that they can be heard for miles. There are some creatures," said Paul, warming with his subject, "I don't know how many yards long, and I forget their names, but Florence knows, that pretend to be in distress. And when a man goes near them, out of compassion, they open their great jaws and attack him. But all he has got to do," said Paul, boldly tendering this information to the very doctor himself, "is to keep on turning as he runs away, and then, as they turn slowly, because they are so long and can't bend, he's sure to beat them. And though old Glubb don't know why the sea should make me think of my mama that's dead, or what it is that it is always saying, he knows a great deal about it. And I wish," the child concluded, with a sudden falling of his countenance, and failing in his animation, as he looked like one forlorn, upon the three strange faces, "that you'd let old Glubb come here to see me, for I know him very well, and he knows me." "Ha!" said the doctor, shaking his head. "This is bad, but study will do much." Mrs. Blimmer opined, with something like a shiver, that he was an unaccountable child, and, allowing for the difference of visage, looked at him pretty much as Mrs. Pipchin had been used to do. "Take him round the house, Cornelia," said the doctor, "and familiarize him with his new sphere. Go with that young lady, Dombey." Dombey obeyed, giving his hand to the abstruse Cornelia, and looking at her sideways, with timid curiosity, as they went away together. for her spectacles, by reason of the glistening of the glasses, made her so mysterious, that he didn't know where she was looking, and was not indeed quite sure that she had any eyes at all behind them. Cornelia took him first to the schoolroom, which was situated at the back of the hall, and was approached through two baize doors, which deadened and muffled the young gentlemen's voices. Here, there were eight young gentlemen in various stages of mental prostration, all very hard at work, and very grave indeed. Toots, as an old hand, had a desk to himself in one corner. And a magnificent man, of immense age, he looked, in Paul's young eyes, behind it. Mr. Feeder, B.A., who sat at another little desk, had his Virgil stop on, and was slowly grinding that tune to four young gentlemen. Of the remaining four, two, who grasped their foreheads convulsively, were engaged in solving mathematical problems. One with his face like a dirty window, from much crying, was endeavoring to flounder through a hopeless number of lines before dinner, and one sat looking at his task in stony stupefaction and despair which it seemed had been his condition ever since breakfast time. The appearance of a new boy did not create the sensation that might have been expected. Mr. Feeder, B.A., who was in the habit of shaving his head for coolness, and had nothing but little bristles on it, gave him a bony hand, and told him he was glad to see him, which Paul would have been very glad to have told him, if he could have done so with the least sincerity. Then Paul, instructed by Cornelia, shook hands with the four young gentlemen at Mr. Feeder's desk, then with the two young gentlemen at work on the problems, who were very feverish, then with the young gentleman at work against time, who was very inky, and lastly with the young gentleman in a state of stupefaction, who was flabby and quite cold. Paul, having been already introduced to Toots, that pupil merely chuckled and breathed hard, as his custom was, and pursued the occupation in which he was engaged. It was not a severe one, for on account of his having gone through so much in more senses than one, and also of his having, as before hinted, left off blowing in his prime, Toots now had license to pursue his own course of study, which was chiefly to write long letters to himself from persons of distinction, at P. Toots Esquire, Brighton, Sussex, apostrophe, and to preserve them in his desk with great care. These ceremonies passed, Cornelia led Paul upstairs to the top of the house, which was rather a slow journey, on account of Paul being obliged to land both feet on every stair, before he mounted another. But they reached their journey's end at last. And there, in a front room, looking over the wild sea, Cornelia showed him a nice little bed with white hangings, close to the window, on which there was already beautifully written on a card in round text down strokes very thick, and up strokes very fine dominie, while two other little bedsteads in the same room were announced, through like means, as respectively appertaining unto Briggs and Tozer. Just as they got downstairs again into the hall, Paul saw the weak-eyed young man who had given that mortal offense to Mrs. Pipchin, suddenly seize a very large drumstick, and fly at a gong that was hanging up, as if he had gone mad, or wanted vengeance. Instead of receiving warning, however, or being instantly taken into custody, the young man left off unchecked, after having made a dreadful noise. Then Cornelia Blimmer said to Dombey that dinner would be ready in a quarter of an hour, and perhaps he had better go into the schoolroom among his friends. Apostrophe, so Dombey, deferentially passing the great clock which was still as anxious as ever, to know how he found himself, opened the schoolroom door a very little way, and strayed in like a lost boy, shutting it after him with some difficulty. His friends were all dispersed about the room except the stony friend, who remained immovable. Mr. Feeder was stretching himself in his gray gown, as if, regardless of expense, he were resolved to pull the sleeves off. Hey-ho-hum! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Feeder, shaking himself like a cart horse. Oh dear me, yeah. Apostrophe, Paul was quite alarmed by Mr. Feeder's yawning. It was done on such a great scale, and he was so terribly in earnest. All the boys who Toots accepted seemed knocked up and were getting ready for dinner, some newly tying their neckcloths, which were very stiff indeed, and others washing their hands or brushing their hair in an adjoining antechamber as if they didn't think they should enjoy it at all. Young Toots, who was ready beforehand, and had therefore nothing to do, and had leisure to bestow upon Paul, said, with heavy good nature, "Sit down, Dombey." Apostrophe, "Thank you, sir," apostrophe, said Paul. His endeavoring to hoist himself onto a very high window seat, and his slipping down again, appeared to prepare Toots' mind for the reception of a discovery. "You're a very small chap," apostrophe, said Mr. Toots. "Yes, sir, I'm small," apostrophe, returned Paul. "Thank you, sir," apostrophe, for Toots had lifted him into the seat, and done it kindly too. "Who's your tailor?" apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Toots, after looking at him for some moments. "It's a woman that has made my clothes as yet," apostrophe, said Paul. "My sister's dressmaker," apostrophe, "my tailor's Burgess and Company," apostrophe, said Toots. "Fashionable, but very dear," apostrophe. Paul had wit enough to shake his head, as if he would have said it was easy to see that, and indeed he thought so. "Your father's regularly rich, ain't he?" apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Mr. Toots. "Yes, sir," apostrophe, said Paul. "He's Dombey and Son," apostrophe, "and which?" apostrophe, apostrophe, demanded Toots. "And Son, sir," apostrophe, replied Paul. Mr. Toots made one or two attempts, in a low voice, to fix the firm in his mind, but not quite succeeding, said he would get Paul to mention the name again tomorrow morning, as it was rather important. And indeed he purposed nothing less than writing himself a private and confidential letter from Dombey and Son immediately. By this time the other pupils, always excepting the stony boy, gathered round. They were polite, but pale, and spoke low, and they were so depressed in their spirits, that in comparison with the general tone of that company, Master Bitherstone was a perfect miller, or complete jest book. Apostrophe, and yet he had a sense of injury upon him too, had Bitherstone. "You sleep in my room, don't you?" apostrophe, apostrophe, asked a solemn young gentleman, whose shirt collar curled up the lobes of his ears. "Master Briggs?" apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Paul. "Tozer," apostrophe, said the young gentleman. Paul answered yes, and Tozer, pointing out the stony pupil, said that was Briggs. Paul had already felt certain that it must be either Briggs or Tozer, though he didn't know why. "Is yours a strong constitution?" apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Tozer. Paul said he thought not. Tozer replied that he thought not also, judging from Paul's looks, and that it was a pity, for it need be. He then asked Paul if he were going to begin with Cornelia, and on Paul saying yes, apostrophe, all the young gentlemen, Briggs accepted, gave a low groan. It was drowned in the tintinnabulation of the gong, which sounding again with great fury, there was a general move towards the dining room, still excepting Briggs the stony boy, who remained where he was, and as he was, and on its way to whom Paul presently encountered a round of bread, genteelly served on a plate and napkin, and with a silver fork lying crosswise on the top of it. Dr. Blimmer was already in his place in the dining room, at the top of the table, with Miss Blimmer and Mrs. Blimmer on either side of him. Mr. Feeder in a black coat was at the bottom. Paul's chair was next to Miss Blimmer, but it being found, when he sat in it, that his eyebrows were not much above the level of the tablecloth, some books were brought in from the doctor's study, on which he was elevated, and on which he always sat from that time carrying them in, and out himself on after occasions, like a little elephant and castle. Apostrophe, grace having been said by the doctor, dinner began. There was some nice soup, also roast meat, boiled meat, vegetables, pie, and cheese. Every young gentleman had a massive silver fork, and a napkin, and all the arrangements were stately and handsome. In particular, there was a butler in a blue coat and bright buttons, who gave quite a winey flavor to the table beer. He poured it out so superbly. Nobody spoke, unless spoken to, except Dr. Blimmer, Mrs. Blimmer, and Miss Blimmer, who conversed occasionally. Whenever a young gentleman was not actually engaged with his knife and fork or spoon, his eye, with an irresistible attraction, sought the eye of Dr. Blimmer, Mrs. Blimmer, or Miss Blimmer, and modestly rested there. Toots appeared to be the only exception to this rule. He sat next Mr. Feeder on Paul's side of the table, and frequently looked behind and before the intervening boys, to catch a glimpse of Paul. Only once during dinner was there any conversation that included the young gentleman. It happened at the epoch of the cheese, when the doctor, having taken a glass of port wine, and hemmed twice or thrice, said, "It is remarkable, Mr. Feeder, that the Romans apostrophe at the mention of this terrible people, their implacable enemies." Every young gentleman fastened his gaze upon the doctor, with an assumption of the deepest interest. One of the number who happened to be drinking, and who caught the doctor's eye glaring at him through the side of his tumbler, left off so hastily that he was convulsed for some moments, and in the sequel ruined Dr. Blimmer's point. "It is remarkable, Mr. Feeder," apostrophe said the doctor, beginning again slowly, "that the Romans, in those gorgeous and profuse entertainments, of which we read in the days of the emperors, when luxury had attained a height unknown before or since, and when whole provinces were ravaged to supply the splendid means of one imperial banquet," apostrophe here the offender, who had been swelling and straining, and waiting in vain for a full stop, broke out violently. "Johnson," apostrophe said Mr. Feeder, in a low reproachful voice, "take some water." Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.